Good morning. Luke Burbank is with me this morning while John Hockenberry is away all this week.
Morning, Celeste. Pleasure to be here, where we're hearing a bunch of new information this morning about this group calling itself Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. We're going to get the latest updates from Yemen, including a conversation about that country and also its security issues. That's later this hour.
But first, remember healthcare? That's going to be coming up big in 2010. Yeah, Wendell Potter worked for more than a decade at Cigna as an executive before becoming a whistleblower. He's now a hardworking, passionate advocate for healthcare reform. He's currently the senior fellow on healthcare at the Center for Media and Democracy. Mr. Potter's with us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Celeste.
As we all know, the House passed the bill with a public option. The Senate did not. And you've argued very strongly for a public option. In fact, at one point you said a healthcare reform without the public option would be like the Insurance Industry Profit Protection and Enhancement Act. Right?
I did say that. You're exactly right.
But now I read your editorial that you published on Christmas Eve, and you said, despite that, you're not against this bill.
You know, the main objective, and we need to make sure that we don't lose sight of this, is to make sure that we are bringing more people into coverage, because 45,000 people die every year because they don't have health insurance coverage, and many more are in the ranks of the underinsured. And for a lot of those people, it's just as bad as not having coverage. So we have to make sure that we're not, as I said in that piece, cutting off our noses to spite our faces. And trying to be ideologically pure just for the sake of ideology. We need to make sure that we come up with the best solution that is politically feasible to get as many people in coverage as we possibly can. And we don't know what the final bill is going to look like yet. The Senate bill does not have a public option, but the House bill does. So we will be seeing over the next few weeks what finally happens when House and Senate leaders get together to put together a final bill that hopefully will pass both houses and get on its way to the president.
You know, you said you've been receiving a lot of emails where the subject line is kill the bill. I mean, obviously there's a lot of people who are very vehemently opposed to the Senate version and perhaps the House version as well. What is so objectionable in these bills?
Well, I think people have different reasons for objecting. Even during the several months of my advocacy, I was criticized by people on the far left who wouldn't be satisfied with anything except a single payer system like Canada has. And now there are people who are just as adamantly opposed to any legislation that doesn't include a public option. I think that's where it's coming from. People are disappointed that they're not maybe going to get everything that they hope for in this legislation. But my point is, we need to take a look at what the alternatives are if this legislation doesn't pass, even in the form that will come out of the conference committee. We will have no controls over healthcare costs. We will have no assurance that people will have the ability to get affordable coverage in the foreseeable future. In fact, it won't happen.
You know, another thing that you wrote struck me, and you said insurance companies likely will try to game the system in their relentless quests to meet Wall Street's expectations, but many of the practices they've used for decades to do that will become illegal. So I'm wondering, you say many of the things that insurance companies have done to try and make a profit off of their healthcare plans will become illegal. What are those things?
I'm glad you mentioned that, because there are important elements of this legislation, even the Senate bill. It would prohibit health insurance companies from using pre-existing conditions or the fact that someone's been sick in the past to deny them coverage or to avoid paying their bills. That's one of the major successes, really, of this legislation. Another is that it would prohibit health insurance companies from purging or getting rid of small businesses when someone who's employed by a small business gets sick or injured and has high medical bills. Those are some of the key ways that health insurance companies over the past several years have been able to protect their profits and really enhance them, and that is essentially to avoid paying claims and avoid insurance people who really need insurance.
But that doesn't prohibit them from raising their rates on someone who has a pre-existing condition, maybe raising them to a point where they can't afford insurance.
There will be some precautions against that. There are no rate caps per se, but it does prohibit the. It will provide the. There will be some affordability, and there will be the injection of some additional competition. Even if there is not a public option, there will be some new nonprofit health insurance companies that will be created to compete against the for-profit companies.
But, you know, you worked in the health insurance industry for a long time at a very high level. What sticks out as a red flag to you? I know that you feel that this bill is a good foundation and can be amended in the future to make it even stronger, but are you seeing some places that are potential loopholes?
A couple. One is that it would allow the insurance companies to charge older people as much as three times what they charge young people. This is in the Senate bill. Originally, it was five times. So what we have now is considerably better than what it started out with. In the House, it's not great, but at least the ratio is 2-1. So I think that is problematic. It should be no greater than 2-1. The other is that the Senate bill would enable insurers to and employers to use health factors in determining how much people will pay for their insurance. So people with diabetes or high cholesterol or high blood pressure could wind up paying more for their care than people who don't have those factors. So that's kind of a roundabout way of being able to charge more for people who are not as healthy as others. But at least they would be able to get coverage, and there would be some limitations on that. And I think the regulations, the additional regulations that these bills would put in place would serve to keep the rates from going considerably higher than they would without the legislation.
Last question for you. You've put out a call for people to stop these kill the bill emails, and you say many people won't live to see the next debate. Do you feel that it's time to kind of set aside the really passionate debate that we've had over the healthcare reform and focus on the essential issues?
We do need, as we've always needed to focus on that. The people have lost it at times on the left and the right, the reasons why we're having this debate in the first place. So I think we need to focus our passion on making sure that we're doing the right thing for our fellow citizens in this country.
Okay. That is Wendell Potter joining us. He worked in the health insurance industry for 15 years. He's now a senior fellow at the Center for Media and Democracy. Thanks so much.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.